You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Damian Woody joins us right now, and Wood, let's begin there, man. First, just your thoughts on that trade before we get to any other fallout from it.
Oh man, I mean, this is a man that got traded twice in a season, going from Jacksonville to Minnesota, and now Minnesota to Baltimore.
So is that going from hell to hell to heaven?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a great situation for him, man, because, you know, that Baltimore defense, particularly that front seven, man, they got a lot of really good players up there. And Wink Martindale, he knows how to, you know, draw up defenses and put guys in position to really maximize their potential. So this is a great – I mean, he fell into a great situation with that environment in Baltimore, man. And you have to wonder what's – you know, Minnesota seemed like a situation where – you know, they might be looking towards 2021 when the salary cap is going to be an issue for a lot of teams. So it's kind of a head scratcher, but Baltimore is clearly going for it.
Now, the first thing we think of all the time, because we're a New York show, is the New York teams. And both teams obviously are absent of an edge rusher. The Jets haven't had one since John Abraham. They never seem to get them. So, but I don't know if the Jets are in a place at this moment to make that move. The Giants, however, would are in a terrible division. And it's as bad as they are at 1-5, the Eagles are all banged up. The Cowboys are a disaster, and Washington's not even trying to win. So the idea is this. Bart brought this up. They gave up a third round pick for Leonard Williams last year, and that didn't make any sense. Can you explain why the Giants wouldn't have tried to be aggressive and make this move for them and maybe shake up that division a little bit?
You know, that's a really good question. My only thought is, I think Leonard Williams is playing on a franchise tag, and, you know, that would be another hefty salary that you have to take on, or a hefty contract that you have to take on if you're the New York Giants, and we don't know what 2021 looks like, so maybe that's a reason why they didn't decide to pursue it. But I think what Bart was talking about is absolutely right. You gave a third round pick for Leonard Williams, who's basically a run stopper, and here's a guy in Njokwe who's 25 years old and has 45.
Yeah, it's like 45 sacks and over 10 a year.
Yeah. Pass rushes are a premium. They're a premium. And that's the one area that the Giants, they don't have a pass rusher. Think about how this guy could help Leonard Williams, or, you know, those interior defensive tackles when you got a guy who can threaten the edge. So, you know, again, I don't know the reasoning why. Maybe it's because of the salary cap for next year. But, I mean, if I were the Giants, I would at least, you know, been in some type of discussions knowing how terrible my division is.
And that's what I'm talking about. So I wonder if Gettleman's just out of the loop. You know what I mean? Like, is he out of the loop? Because I understand that Baltimore may have a relationship with Minnesota because they traded the kicker to him last year. But to me, it just shows the difference in some general managers playing checkers and in some playing chess. Because, you know, you look at what DeCoste did last year with turning that kicker that he gave to Minnesota that they were going to cut anyway because they have two outstanding specialists. And then that kicker in turn got traded to the Jets. But then the Ravens took that same pick and made that Calais Campbell. So that's what I'm just trying to point out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying.
Some people, like you said, Bart, some people are playing chess and some people are playing checkers.
And so that's what I'm saying. So, like, I know, listen, this team is, I think that Joe Judge is a good coach, and I think he's going to be well in this league. I think he's going to try to figure some things out, and this team is still in the process. But, you know, for me, you think about a lot of the moves that Gettleman made and didn't make. I wonder if Gettleman is the right man for the job and if he's current enough to understand how to get transactions done and how to use what the old school did, but also what the new school did and kind of marry the two. I just don't know if he's too far, you know, to one side and not the other.
And let me add to that, too, Wood, is that Jordan Renan, who covers the Giants, sent me a message while we were talking about this at the start of the show. And he said, from what he understands, the Giants didn't see Ngakoue as a good fit for the way they play, for their system.
A good fit. I mean, last time that I got to tell you, man, that really irks me so much, man, about when you talk about good fit for our system. Every good coach I've ever played under, it's not the system, it's the players. And then you craft the system to fit what the players do best. This whole nonsense of, well, he doesn't fit our system. Is he a good player? If he's a good player, you find ways to utilize him. Last time I checked, where's the pass rush coming from the Giants' edge? They have none. You can't tell Ngakoue is not a good player, because he is. He's a young pass rusher, 25 years old. Bart, you talked about it. Has like 45 sacks in that amount of time. But he doesn't fit our system.
So
it's just so backwards thinking.
So point counterpoint, right, D Wood? So you know the point is, Renan was saying he doesn't fit. Okay, maybe they used to send him in a 4-3 with Jacksonville, and then seeing him in a 4-3 with Minnesota. Okay, sometimes you know you may not always understand something, but you trust the people that's making the decision. Okay, I think that the Ravens is a very well ran organization. Make a lot of good decisions. They've been successful. You know, expansion team of 1996 has won two Super Bowls in its existence. Eric DeCoste is considered one of the better executives in the league. Why can he fit in their 3-4, but he can't fit in yours? That's what I don't understand. So obviously we have to make a decision and figure out, who do we trust more? Do we trust Eric DeCoste more and the Baltimore Ravens organization as far as being able to evaluate talent and understand how to utilize talent, being that they took a quarterback? Remember that Gettleman said he didn't see a franchise quarterback in that draft. All we got is one that's won an MVP and another that is in consideration for winning an MVP in Josh Allen. So you tell me, who am I supposed to believe, D. Wood?
Damn sure, hey, I would go with the guy down in Baltimore. Baltimore is consistently, year in and year out, one of the better teams in the National Football League. So, I mean, that question is just easy to answer. I go back to, I hate this whole system thing. You know, it's just really good organizations find ways to utilize a player's abilities. Regardless of system, your system can evolve and change. Okay, but acquiring good players is hard to do. Just hearing that just frustrates me.
It just brings us to, you know, Adam Gase saying, you know, having that issue with Le'Veon Bell, and just clearly that Le'Veon Bell just didn't fit the way he wanted to play because that's not how he plays. And we had that same argument. It's like, man, when you have a really good player, you find a way to make him fit, because the object is to win with the pieces, you know, that you have. It's so damn frustrating. Let's move on, though, in the Giants realm, though, because tonight, Thursday Night Football starts week 7.
Them Cowboys.
Well, we'll get to the Cowboys. No, we heard Woody on the Cowboys. But before we do that, tonight's game is Giants-Eagles. The NFC East is a disaster. I mean, it's really a mess. Does this game in your mind, like, first of all, you watch because it's football, right? I know it's one of those games where you're like, do you really look forward to this? But still, the Eagles to me are the team that if you want to put money on anybody, it would be them to come out of this division. That makes tonight's game pretty damn important for a really banged up team.
Yeah, listen, the NFC East has just fallen off a cliff. Mm-hmm. The once mighty NFC East, and you're right. Of all the teams in that division, you would think, just off of pedigree, the Philadelphia Eagles should not only win this game, but win this division. And I know they've suffered a ton of injuries, you know, on the, you know, offensive line, the skill position. I mean, they are as banged up as any other team in the league. But you have a Super Bowl winning head coach in Doug Peterson. You've got a quarterback that you're paying a ton of money to. This is a team that knows how to win. You would think that this team will find a way to beat a New York Giants team that's still trying to figure it out. If they don't win tonight, Wow, I just don't know. I don't know if any team out of that division is worthy of being in the playoffs. Although someone is going to have to be in the playoffs winning that division.
But you know what the crazy thing is, D. Wood, for years, Howie Roseman has made more transactions than any other general manager in football. And you wonder, like, where are you getting all this money from? And I just don't wonder if the chickens have finally come home to roost.
Bill is coming due. Bill is coming due. It's coming due.
$64 million over the cap.
Right. Yeah. So now they can't go get the help that they need. And what happened is, and we've seen it happen before, the general manager was the last one to get the memo that the team was getting old, and those players that he depended on, like Graham, like Peters, Lane Johnson, Kelsey, are starting to get old, and you have major deficiencies in certain parts of your team, and you can't fill those holes with qualified players because you got such a big bill that you have to pay. And you know what I'm saying? He basically been buying players with credit cards. And that interest rate ballooned up. And especially if the salary cap drops next year, he's going to be in the same position. And it puts so much pressure on your scouting department to make sure that you draft well. And then going on and getting Rieger after we see what Claypool is doing, after we see what Jefferson is doing in Minnesota, it's like, I don't know if you should have been evaluating bringing these players back, bringing DeSean Jackson back, put the band back together. Nah, man, this dude ain't been healthy consistently in I don't know how many years. He comes in, he teases you, and he pulls a hamstring. He's like a beautiful Ferrari, but the engine light is always on.
Bart, you're exactly right. And, you know, Alan, I think you referenced this. There's $64 million over the cap going into next year. They got all sorts of problems. Zach Ertz, who they just put on IR, he wanted a new contract. Jason Peters is playing on his last leg. They got all these injuries on the offensive line at the skill position. I mean, listen, if the division weren't so bad, you know, the Philadelphia would be in dire straits. But they actually have an opportunity to win this division. And once you get into the playoffs, it's anybody's game. But make no mistake about it, the bill is coming due, and it's going to be ugly in Philadelphia come offseason.
I mean, you'd think before November 3rd that they would want to sell because, you know, they have a bunch of players that they get rid of that would help them in that situation. But because of where they are in the division and the division's so bad, you don't want to do that because you want to stay competitive. Now, let's move over to the Jets, and I know we hate to talk about them, but let's do it anyway. We've been debating this. We've been kicking this around, and I wanted to get your take on it because I know Bart's take, and Bart has made a really good case for the other side. So when it comes to the Jets, the probability of them getting the number one pick is very high right now at 0-6. The question is, and it's not an easy answer, I don't think, is it Trevor or is it trade when you get that number one pick?
Man, that's a good question. I'm going to have to say, I will probably have to say Trevor, man, because, here's a couple reasons why. First of all, let me say this. I'm a believer in Sam Darnold's talent. I am. I think the organization has done terrible by him of surrounding him, you know, with subpar talent and constant change in the coaching staff and all of that. However, when you have an opportunity to draft a generational type of talent in Trevor Lawrence, I don't think you can pass that up. Because not only are you drafting the talent, but you're also drafting the fact that you're going to get this dude cheap for 5 years. And see, if you're the Jets, this is not an easy fix. It's not a quick turnaround. It's going to take some time and draft capital to turn this thing around. And the Jets got to make a decision on Sam Darnold this offseason.
So what?
They're going to have to exercise that fifth year option, which is going to jack up Sam Darnold's contract number. So I think if it comes down to it, I think you're going to have to draft Trevor Lawrence.
But tell me this, Wood. So this is my case, right? And this is the counterpoint. Okay, if you do believe in Sam and say that you've done him wrong, yeah, you can pick up his option. It's going to move his salary up, but it's not going to be crazy. You still have another year to really evaluate him, and you still have the franchise tag that you don't want to use, but you have it at your disposal. Jacksonville Jaguars have two first-round draft picks this year, and they have the Minnesota Vikings, who are just starting to try and tank as well, second-round draft pick, and their second-round draft pick. So they give you two ones and two twos, which essentially are top 35 picks. Is that enough for you to say, you know what, now I have four picks in the first round this year. I got three this year and three next year, and I got three or four because mine's, I got four or five top 35 picks in this year's draft, and then next year's draft, I got five top 35 picks in that draft too. Is that enough to fill up the roster with those type of premium players, and you got a boatload of cash?
It's basically like the Jimmy Johnson, Herschel Walker thing. I mean, rebuild your team on tons of picks and do it that way.
Yeah, plus you already got the one from Seattle as well, and your own, right, which is going to suck.
I will say under that scenario, if you can make that trade, you absolutely do it. I think you absolutely do it, you know, because now you're talking about an absurd amount of draft capital that you'll have at your disposal if you're able to make a trade like that with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I understand that Trevor Lawrence is this, you know, generational guy, but I think if you're a believer in Sam Darnold's talent, I think a lot of people do believe in Sam Darnold can be that guy. If you're getting the amount of draft capital that you just put out there, I would do that. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. All right, well, let's
How
get
about
to
the Cowboys.
Let's get to the Cowboys here because Bart had his take on it yesterday. The anonymous sources coming out talking about the coaching staff and there's no teachers here, how they're not prepared. They don't make good in-game adjustments. A lot of issues with Mike McCarthy and his staff. And I know you have something pretty strong to say about this as a former player.
Well, yeah, listen, man, first of all, let me say, well, as far as the coaching staff is concerned, I agree. I think that the coaches, both Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, they should be held accountable. I think that schematically and just as far as teaching, they're not holding up their end of the bargain. There's no question about that. But I just have a big problem with guys just running off to their favorite reporters and talking about and snitching on the coaches. Like, last time I turned on the film, I'm seeing star players fumbling the ball against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm seeing star players dropping balls, you know, in critical situations in the game. I'm seeing guys getting tossed out of the club on defense, you know, bad run fits, getting burned over the top in the passing game. So as much as we can crap on Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, the players aren't doing a damn thing on the field. But they want to be running to the reporters as anonymous sources talking about the coaches. Like, to me, that's just a bunch of BS, man. Like, at the end of the day, you got to look in the mirror and see what can you do, and, you know, what can you do to improve your play and not run out there and snitch on everybody else to try to avoid the light being on you. Because guess what? The big eye in the sky never lies. Everybody sees who's turning it down, who's missing tackles, who's dropping balls, who's fumbling the ball. So that's just how I feel about it. I think it's bull, man, for people to be running to the media as anonymous sources.
Well, D. Wood, I wonder if the same people that are saying that the coaches don't teach, they can't make adjustments, has something to say to Woods when he said, you can't expect me to play hard or us to play hard for 70 snaps. I'm like, what?
Boy,
like 70 snaps?
Boy,
that was a warm-up for us.
Bart, could you believe that man came out his mouth and said
and
that
put his name
to the
it.
Media?
And put his name to it. Like, put his name and face to it. I mean, like, I appreciate it if that's how you feel.
Like, you can think it, but you can't say that. Like,
but D. Wood, listen, we were on number one defense. Your first year there, we were the number one defense. We played more than 70 snaps a game. Like, bro, 70 snaps a game is not a lot. If you would have said 100, 90, 89, that's the difference. But guess what? Your offense was putting up historical numbers. So how can Mike McCarthy not be able to make adjustments when Dak Prescott still leads the league in passer rating, meaning passing yards? So if he ain't played in 2 weeks, and he still leads the league in passing yards. So how do you mean to tell me that this team, that Mike McCarthy don't know how to coach offense? Now, listen, Mike Nolan, I had him in Baltimore. He's the one who converted the Ravens over to 3-4. I don't like him. He knows I don't like him, and he knows why. He know I might smack one of his eyes back to the same color because he got mismatched color eyeballs. But I digress. You know what I'm saying? One thing I do know is he's a teacher. He's a son of a coach. And I know that was a head coach, but one thing I can tell you about him is he's prepared. Now, what the issue is, the players are too dumb to be able to grasp what he's teaching, and he may not have to take that back and scale it back a little bit, but I'm watching defenses that can't communicate. I'm watching guys in snug formations crisscrossing and people running to each other because they're not communicating, saying, hey, limbo banjo, my way, your way. Instead, they're like, that's my man, and you run, and your man go behind his man, and then y'all running to each other looking like an episode of the Three Damn Stooges.
Bro, it's the Cowboy. When I watch the Cowboys, man,
it's the Cowboys'
sad,
way, man. That's how they built.
It's sad, man. It's and this thing could get a lot worse before it gets better. I can tell you that right now. If they're snitching and stuff right now, mm-hmm. while they're in contention, man, imagine in about 3 or 4 weeks, mm-hmm. it could be much worse.
You know what happens? You end up getting a fight or somebody gets sent home from practice. You know what that is, because somebody fighting in practice. You know how it goes. We know how it goes. They just want to get home quick so they can start.
You'd be like, man, I didn't want to play the rest of the season anyway. I'll just go ahead and get into a fight.
Yup, start packing up that pot. You know what I'm saying? Let's start getting U-Hauls packed up. It's going to be an early day, boys.
That's going to be interesting to see, and that just shows you about that division, just the condition that certainly it is.
That's why the hell the Giants should have made a trade today, because all this craziness is going on within the division.
Again, the Eagles have to cut salary. The Washington's not even trying to win, and Dallas is a soap opera right now, and you're just going to sit there and not be aggressive and say, hey, you know what, we can advance the cause, and some of these young guys can get some great experience if we just kind of put a little extra into it and win the division. Anyways, we're just shouting at the wall because Gettleman didn't do anything and he's now with the Ravens. Damian Woody, it's always great to have you on, my man. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Hey, all right. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.